Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. Where are you speaking to us from today?
Sunny North Carolina, Jim, and thank you for inviting me on. Beautiful day here in the Asheville area.
Are you getting the forest fire smoke?
No, actually, you know, when my trading partner mentioned that, we were talking yesterday, and he was up in Philly choking on smoke, and I didn't even know about the Canadian fires. It's not like it's drifted even to North Carolina, let alone Florida, where I normally hold up.
Well, New York and Philadelphia, yeah, Buffalo, they're all really getting a taste of it. Well, and apparently Washington is now offering help to fight the Canadian fires because it's affecting the states.
We were wondering really whether it was the California Sodom and Gomorrah effect catching up with Canada, but I don't think it's so much Canadians who are bad apples. It's really just your premier.
Well, anyway, what's going on with the stock markets right now? You say there's confusion. People aren't really sure what to do right now.
The market really takes its, I use this word in a pejorative way, but it takes its inspiration from news. And it doesn't matter what the news is, and the reaction is not necessarily predictable. You know, the market likes to react perversely to news, especially when it's overly anticipated. And sometimes it reacts correctly, intuitively, to news, but there's no news right now. The Fed story is functionally dead. We're sort of in limbo land there, where everybody's kind of resigned to the fact that, yeah, eventually the Fed will stop tightening, but whatever, however much discounting the market was going to do for the tightening outlook, it's already been done. So the market can't really react to the Fed the way it used to, and it's in a void. I mean, it doesn't know how to do anything unless there's news to respond to.
Now, you're saying when it came to stocks, if it's not Chipotle or Microsoft, people don't know where to go.
Well, those are the chimpanzees who manage your money and mine. Not mine, but I hope not yours. They only have one. They sort of rotate from theme to theme, all right? So when the chimps have decided that they played out the tech stock thing, they meet in a banana filled room and they say, well, what can we buy now? And they've rotated into small cap stocks. So it's not like they rotate out of anything. They just keep everything else kind of on hold on a glide path, and then they buy up the Russell and the ETF, which is IWM. They buy the small cap stocks. So, but the biggies, and even with the decision, they don't have much heavy lifting to do. You know, they're looking at just a bare handful of stocks, Chipotle, Microsoft, you know, I guess loosely speaking, the FANGs. And so they prop up, they make five or six stocks move to new heights that draws all the other stocks in the index up. And they don't, in Chipotle's case, you know, it's been sideways for a month, and sideways at the high end of a gap that occurred back on, let's see what day it was, on the 25th of April. All right, so it had this huge gap, and it never really came down. The gap occurs on zero volume and zero money. It closes one day at one price, and then based on a squeeze on some earnings report, maybe a bad one for all I know, they gap it up 20 or 30 points, and in this case even more than that, and no shares changed hands in that gap, and therefore no money. So it cost the chimps nothing at all. It cost the portfolio managers nothing to push these stocks way up. And when they get up to, Chipotle goes above 2,000, it's not like every pensioner and widow is bailing, you know, they're not selling the stock. Nobody trades the stock except the big boys. So they sort of close their ranks and say, we'll just keep it up here. And if some chimp should break ranks and think, no, no, and then he comes in and tries to unload a few thousand shares of Chipotle at $2,100 a share, the chimps will buy as much of it as they want, and then when they say screw it, they'll take it back down to 1900 or 1800 or whatever, and they'll just accumulate down there, and then when time comes and the market mood is right, they'll gap it up again. So it's a perpetual motion machine. There's no possibility of loss until such time as we really get into a bear market and all the portfolio managers' customers are going to want to redeem their shares. So redemptions are going to force things the other way eventually. But for now, everything has been on autopilot for years with the chimps, and it costs them nothing to sustain altitude in a stock like Chipotle while they switch to another rotation theme. They can't handle more than one theme at the same time, in the same way that some people can't chew gum and breathe at the same time.
Is lithium getting more attention again?
Funny, actually, as we speak, I have a lithium stock myself. Let's see what it's doing. It looks like crap. Mm-hmm. I have a company called Frontier Lithium that was a pick of one of my newsletter friends, and it gets nothing but bad press, really. Some of the bad press is video recorded visits to some of the sites where they mine lithium, and you know, where lithium is produced, you generally have an industrial mess. So that side has not been very good. And of course, it's stimulated thinking about alternatives with, what is it, sodium ion batteries or something. You know, so the lithium story, I think, is still in the muck, in the same way that its chart is in the muck.
Ford says it's ramping up production of its electric F-150 pickup truck because of high demand and long waiting lists. Will people be disappointed when they get that truck?
Not as disappointed as the ones who have been waiting for Tesla's version of it, you know. Ford, I think, put out that press release, and the only thing they neglected to mention was that it will be powered, you know, all the components will be AI powered, you know, it'll be artificial intelligence. But otherwise, they didn't miss a trick, and nobody will be disappointed. But it remains to be seen, you know, how easily Ford F-150s or whatever are going to be absorbed into the market in a completely new iteration that requires charging it up and takes into account, you know, the range that you get on a full battery. So I don't know. It's just another, let's just say it's another entrant into the EV ring.
And the ads for it, I mean, it's a sharp-looking truck. And one of the promotion points is that you can use it as an emergency battery to power your house during a power failure.
Great. I'm sure everybody will be out there doing that, you know, discovering that if they turn off everything but their refrigerator, maybe the last 2 days.
Well, the refrigerator is the most important part if you want to save your food. At the price of steak nowadays, if you have steaks in the freezer, you don't want them to thaw.
Well, if you live in Florida, it might be a question of saving yourself in 90-degree heat when you try to sleep.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, what's happening in the oil market?
I've been pretty bearish on crude for a while, and it's currently trading, this is the NYMEX crude, at 70, just a tad above $70 a share. I've been looking for a move to 80, but you could have been looking for that for the last 5 weeks, and it hasn't happened. So crude, I think, is kind of bending to forces of supply and demand, and of course the cartel would always like to think that it's supply that drives it. I think the Saudis announced some sort of cutback last weekend, but it hasn't exactly stirred up much excitement in the pit, so to speak. So crude looks pretty weak. And there was a time when the stock market, you know, the stock market gets fixated on one theme or another. It can't chew gum and breathe at the same time, but it can handle one theme at a time. And for a while, the theme was oil down bad, oil up good. And that was when we were worried about the economy deflating into oblivion, having a debt deflation, because so much of the collateral for the borrowing that's been done in the financial sphere has been collateralized with energy resources. So we were worried about that for a while, but now crude's coming down and nobody really much cares. If it's headed lower instead of to my $80 a barrel target, that implies that we're finally going to start seeing the price of a regular gas come below $3 a gallon. And psychologically, that'll warm our cockles collectively, but we know it won't last long. And we know that if it takes 6 or 8 months for crude to work its way down from for gas prices to work themselves down from $4 to $3, we can look forward to the spike from $3 to $3.80 occurring in about, 18 hours. So that's the way it goes. And like all other markets, it really doesn't respond anymore to commodity supply and demand. It's only to blather that you think may or may not affect Fed policy. I mean, it's a huge market, but like every other market, you really can't find a market, however big, that trades honestly. And I mean to include the market for treasury bonds and bills, and the market for crude, you name it. All markets are rigged these days, and it's just a big crapshoot.
Now, what is the true state of the U.S. economy? They always point to the jobs report. Oh, 390,000 new jobs were created. There's at least 10 million vacancies available for people who want them. Is that the true state of the U.S. economy?
Well, David Stockman recently wrote brilliantly on that subject, as he does on so many others. And he really thinks these jobs, 390,000 of them, are basically, they're all waitress, busboy, elevator operator jobs. And we can look around in our own lives and see, from an economic standpoint, absolutely horrifying things happening. And this is notwithstanding the bull twaddle 3% GDP growth or whatever rate we're purporting to grow at right now. But when you kind of measure that against what your lying eyes actually, what they see, we see brick and mortar retail virtually imploding. We see whole cities themselves imploding economically. You know, the best example being San Francisco, where Nordstrom's most recently just decided to stop doing business in San Francisco. And the convention business, looking out to 2027, is in the tank. So certainly the life and viability of cities is an economic factor, but nowhere in that 3% GDP growth, which is all bullcrap, do we find any mention of the imploding cities, of businesses that are shutting down, of businesses that are really on their last lap, such as Macy's and even Nordstrom's and the others. So that, of course, impacts on the value of commercial real estate, which is yet to even remotely begin to discount all the closings that are more or less in the pipeline. So at a very real and tangible level, we can all see the U.S. economy is virtually imploding right now. And so we're getting, the market is supposed to get all yippee-yay over 339,000 new busboys, waiters, and elevator operators added to the economy.
Well, also not much confidence in California. Allstate is saying it's going to pull out of covering people for property and casualty damages. State Farm already decided to do that. Is California uninsurable?
Well, no. You know that they're insurable. I know they are because I live in Florida. And we just got our insurance bills for property and casualty, and because no insurer wants to insure property in Florida, the state of Florida is doing it. So that's as much as saying the taxpayers are bearing the burden, and it's spread out among the rich, which defined by the government as anyone not collecting food stamps every week. So California is, there'll still be property and casualty insurance, but it's just going to be a lot more costly, and California is going to be on the hook for the damages.
Is there any cure for California?
Well, one thing that will help is that California's absolute failure, it's almost a failed state. It's almost, might as well be declared a motorcycle gang at this point, an affiliation of Hell's Angels and Pagans or whoever else. But one thing you can look forward to is that absolutely qualifies Gavin Newsom to become the Democrat nominee for president. You know, we can see in the example of Fetterman and so many others that all you need is a track record of massive failure, and that makes you electable. So California can look forward to being rid of Newsom soon, because he may be our next president, but in any case, he's certainly going to be the Democratic candidate.
Anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
Well, just be optimistic. Try not to be too cynical about just kidding, Jim. I think as much as we're prepared to see the market go a lot higher, that's got to end at some point. You know, the forces that are keeping the market up are completely fake. It's artificial, and we're just in one of those moods where stocks are going up irrespective of economic conditions. But I always come back to my friend Charles Hugh Smith, who's sort of working through the steps of his Plan C, living in Hawaii and making sure not only that he's growing vegetables that you can eat in his backyard, but growing them for their nutritional value, things such as breadfruit, I think, was one of his backyard crops. So by his example, I think you can see that it might be necessary to think beyond a plan B, which is hunker down and just survive as best as you can, maybe even bartering with your cul-de-sac neighbors. You might have to think in terms of a plan C, living in a place where that's more self-reliant. That's certainly not true for the cities. You know, the cities rely on very complex and fragile distribution chains to bring food and energy to them. But when you live in a place like, where Charles lives in Hawaii, or for that matter, where I am in North Carolina, the food supply is pretty much, it's pretty secure. So that's the plan C, really. What do I do if the bad stuff really does hit the fan?
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
And thank you, Jim. Always a pleasure to connect with your audience.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com Radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.